Accession number 12710, Mr. John Avery, reel 13.
Mr. J. Avery, reel 13. Keeping clean in the box, how did you do that, Mr. Avery?
Well,
did you have much opportunity to wash?
Oh, well, yes, sir. He got taken back late, and there was these failed shower sort of style, and you got a shower, you know. And that's as much as you got back, and you, what other things you got, like you say, your bottle of beer was sent down for and brought up for. Sometimes you got the naffy wagon coming up, but mostly it was the Salvation Army. They were one of the finest out there, like, you know.
So they came up into the area?
Into the box. Yeah, they come into the box. I mean, to say, you talk about the Salvation Army, like, you know, they are the word during the Second World War, they're the top. You know, no matter where you were at, mostly the thickness of the fight, that's like the one far behind you to follow you up.
And what did they bring?
Well, their cups of tea, like, you know, chocolate, cigarettes, like, you know, the usual things what the lads like, you know. There was no beer, like, you know, but just your cup of tea and your chocolate, cigarettes, like, and other things, like, you know, the different things he had, like, there on there.
And were these manned by Salvation Army men or men and women?
Men and, well, men, and I've seen occasional women in there, like, you know. Oh, there come, I think they got even further than Naffy, really, to be honest, let's be fair about it. You could find them there among the troops where you wouldn't find a Naffy.
Did they get involved with services? Because probably you'd have Salvation Army men with you.
Well, they would do, like, you know, they would. I never actually heard them, but they would have. There were some Salvation Army lads that likely they would talk to them after. And they might have said, they might have asked them to write home to the mothers, the family, like, you know, the wives, if they'd been there. But it never occurred to me, like, being saved, like, you know.
Did you get church parades or church services?
Yeah, oh, yes.
Regularly, you know. What form did they take?
Well, just a small group, like, you know, that what they didn't not like use the thing, the old battalion, like, you know, just maybe the company and a quick service, like, you know, you wouldn't a lot. Who was your Padre now? Was it Padre? Davis, I think it was Davis. I'm not quite sure. I have a New Testament photograph, so when I was out there, so he'd have his name in. It'll be kicking around upstairs somewhere. I think it was Padre Davis.
How important? Because
he was up he was with us after we come away down through Gazala, like, you know.
How important was religion to the men? Did they?
Oh, I don't know. I think there was just, as I say, it is, like, you know, you never. I think they kept it to themselves, like, you know, when you used to have a thing, you used to sing the old regimental hymn, "Bad with me," and all that, like, you know, just you. But I was thinking, you never, they never show it. You know, men, myself, like, you know, as myself, You have to think about it, like, you know, but you never outwardly showed it among your mates, like, you know, but you which in your likes, you know, some of the lad your mates was CVs, the same myself, and some was RSA, and some was Methodists, and, like, you know, it didn't really bother you, like, you know, just...
In times of danger, great danger, when which you did have from time to time, did religion come into that in any way? You know?
Well, to myself, like, you know, at times it flicked across your mind, but then you were in such a heat of battle, you weren't thinking anything but what you had to do, really, what your mind was on. But as I say, sometimes if you were laid in a slit trench in a foxhole, like, you know, and you were getting shelled and mortared, like, you know, and you were dropping around, that was about the most time it ever seemed to enter your mind, like, you know, when you were doing nothing, you were sitting there and you were getting shelled and you were like dodging it, ducking, like, you know. And that was about the most times you did really think about prayer, like, you know.
Other than services, did the padre have any other kind of jobs that he showed when he, for example, visiting you? Did he come round regularly outside of the Sunday service time?
Oh, yes. If you had problems, like, you know... A problem, I don't know, any sort of problem, he went to see him, like, you know, if there was problems back home, like, you know, different things here, maybe some of the lads had lost some of the family with a bomb and all, had died, like, you know, he used to come and, you know, administrative comfort sort of thing. And say, you'd say that if anything could be done, like, you know, if it was really serious, to get you back home, but that was a really impossible task, like, you know, but there you are. These things, it seemed to happen, like, you know.
Did you, in your own experience, come across men who had problems at home, either wives leaving them or... Dear John letters or whatever, that
yes.
kind of thing.
Oh, right.
You know, what kind of thing happened?
Well, as I say, we were out in the desert. There was this lad called Artie Dunne, I tell you. He got married in Ufcombe. She went back to the sailor, like. And she, got out there and he got a letter. The same. She'd finished with him. And well, as I say, it devastated him, you see. Just getting really out in the desert, and it was all of a... I think somebody had stabbed him, like, crying with the padre. I believe the padre did have a word with him, like, he was a Salvation Army, like, you know, most Salvation Army lad. Well, his family was, like, you know. But he used to go to CV church, like, you know, because he was a bugler, you see, and everybody had a gun, church, buglers. Anyway, that was him, and we used to tell him, I said, you can do nothing about it, Artie. He said, you're a long way from home now. So I said, he'd come back to what we told you, the duff come, you were fooled to get married. He said then, like, you know, but as I say, it was one of those things that happened. My brother, he wasn't really the only one that had done the same thing.
Did you recover okay?
Oh, he recovered all right, that was the thing. The lads had jailed him up, and he used to go to different places, you know, and get a drink up, forget all about it. He got over it, which he knew. He could never get back home for that, and he had to step out. He had to get over it. And And we're us, with amongst us, like among the lads. We got them so he did forget about it.
It must have been quite difficult for the long periods that you were there. Nothing was happening.
Oh.
Boredom and this kind of thing. How did you overcome that?
Well, it just depends where you were at. One place we were at. Near Ismailia. There, like, you know. Got out there, like, you know, for a night out, like, you know. Got a bit drinking the old things, like, you know, and walked around.
In the Gazala line itself, were there problems with men being bored and getting up tense and reacting?
You were, because there was really nothing to do, sort of style. Well, I say nothing to do. There was plenty regimental efforts, you know, cleaning rifles, doing this and doing your equipment up this way and that way, and a bit of, maybe you had a, if it was a quiet lull in the thing, you had a bit of marching about and one thing or another, like, you know, and tactics, like, you know, and all that, you know, learn something about the desert warfare, like, you know, and that's about as much as you got. You never got nothing else, like, you know, and you, as I say, he did get bored things. You know, so he did, it was boring, like, you know. And as I say, we had this outpost outside the box, outside in no man's land, like, you know. And it were, yet, I'm just forgetting now, if it was, you were there a week and you were late, you know. Each, you got a company got a different, got a turn out there, like out in the front. And it was our luck to be out there when the balloon went up, like, you know, when Rommel sent the big force in. And Major Furrens, he was in charge of that outpost, like, you know, at the time. And me and this lad called Bobby Vandenberg, he was a bugler. And there was other two of us, like, you know, just to take turns on the gun. And it was a dead no sights to nothing. It was an high tie gun, you know, high tie. Like a high tie 2-pounder. Like, just the ammunition was there. When you had to fire it, you just opened the breech, stuff the shell up and pull the thing. And that was it. You could move it a little, you know, traverse it around wherever you wanted. Like, not a great deal. I was saying around about 45, like, across the front, like, you know, that's as much as you could do with it. And it was just up in a little hole. There wasn't much. I mean, it's if a shell had been direct on it, it would clean the lot out in a jiff. All the lot would have been went in a crack. But it wasn't much.
How big was the post? How was it constructed?
Well, it wasn't a great big place. It was an interruption effort. If when Jerry did come, you see, when the knew that was on one the main boxes that the blowing was going up, like, you know, that was coming. And you were out there in case you got a patrol coming up near enough. And when they got near, we had a chance to have a go at them, like, you know, a jury patrol or a high tide patrol, whichever it was.
Did you have much activity then when you were in this position and the
Well, you said the balloon did go up. What happened then?
No, we did not, while we were there, four part would, but when the balloon went up, like, yes, we, these right eyes did come up and we just fired a round at over, like a few rounds at them, like, where they weighed them, I couldn't tell you, to be honest. But as I say, we had the barrel pointing down that way, and what order we got, well, Major Ference get the order from the box, what was going to happen. As I say, the jury went round and cut us off for sort of time. And what they was told, and what they must have said from the box, like, you know, what was going to happen there, they were trying to break through, and Major Ferns would have to collect what he had and come back to the box and go, come out the same way as they were going out, which we did. We'd go back to the box, like, you know. But there was two...
What are your memories? This is the breakout when you broke out with the Germans surrounding you.
Yes.
What are your memories of that particular night, of that particular day?
Well, just at the memories of that night, this was it. We were back like we were in France, like, you know, we were going to meet Bumpy J again, like, you know. You say, oh, that was it. But as I say, we were told to pull back. But we didn't know what was going to happen, like, you know, what really was happening. And by detail, all we had to know was to pull back to the box. And which you found out later, what was on, they were breaking through. You see, breaking through jury and getting out of the box altogether, through altogether. But when we come out of this outpost and back into the box, we knew Major Ferns, because we could see it was all night time, was all lit up. Ooh. You know, just like a bonfire, like, even there, like the trucks going up, like, burning, getting lit, like, you know. It was one thing. And I don't know if he was told to go that way, but we went to the coast road, and what you find out after, that the 9th Battalion come out that way as well. But I didn't know that till we were told. I know we were going out that way. And we're coming out on the truck down towards Tobruk. This plane come, fighter plane, come straight at us. I shout the driver. That thing is coming, you can see it's coming straight for us. And just look up, and there was a building. And he just drove round the building, he just scoped way back, and then when he come turn around again, he went round the building again, and round the building again, till he made off, like, you know. And then when he pulled away off, we made away back into to Tobruk.
Did you think you'd get away that particular time?
Well, you never thought about getting away, sort of style. It was thought of getting back to your battalion and reforming again, sort of style. But when we were going to Tobruk on the road, just before we got to Tobruk, the tanks come over the escarpment, you know, over the hill. And we thought we were in for it, like, you know. But anyway, we kept motoring on. And while we were motoring on, they had to use these 25 pounders The 25 pounders was firing shells, open sights, like at the tanks. Aye. And when we pulled towards the perimeter of Tobruk, like, you know, this South African captain, like, you know, couldn't have his leg. He says, "Oh, you're all right." He says, "Pull in, get pulling." He says, "All right." We tell him, I said, "Just Jerry's there coming there heavy." "Oh," he says, "you'll never get in here, not get in here, no, not get in here, all right." We hardly getting out of, outside, out of Tobruk, when it was taken. But before that, when we got into Tobruk, there was, we formed up, what would come out of the box, like, what one or two that was formed up out of the box. And we made, I didn't know this as well, like, you know, till Major Furrens had said, like, that we had to stop there with the South Africans. And Major Furrens had said to Shelley we weren't going to stop there, we were going to get back to our own battalion, like. So he come out and he went out on this in the convoy, and just then as we were coming along, we got the stoke was coming at us, like, you know. And we get to this point, and there was like guards, like, you know, just the same way you used to be on the box, like, you know. And there was something said, and we went open the throne, and we got through. What I understand, this is years after, like, you know, that at first it said that if we'd gone out on patrol, like, you know, so we got out that way. And as I say, we made towards our place we had to rendezvous at, like, you know.
Ferenc was leading this particular unit.
Yes, well, he was in charge.
What did you think about him as an officer?
Oh, he was a rough sort of officer, like, but as I say, you know, a gentleman sort of, in the way, like, you know. Oh, he was a decent, but what we saw of him then, like, you know.
Did you have any excitements then on the way to the rendezvous?
Well, not much after that. Once we got through out of Tobruk, it seemed easier till we got to our rendezvous, like, you know. Where was it? I forget the place. Wherever. I think we were forming up.
How were you received there? Because obviously some would have thought you were lost.
Ah. Well, we met up with Watson, Polly Watson, like, you know. Major, it was Major, there was only a platoon company commander, I mean. And met up with him and one or two more, like, you know, and it was the nucleus of the 6th Battalion, like, you know, as I understand, they had a point to go to, like, you know, which was never told of us. Just the officers knew where they had to go. Well, any road, we got to this point, and as Major Watson and one or two more was there, like, you know, I'm forgetting what they call the place.
What happened there?
Well, we just there for I think it was a couple of days or so, like, you know, just they sort of pulled round, like, you know, and getting sorted out.
Had you lost a lot of men by then? A lot of material?
Oh, aye. Well, not well. We hadn't lost a lot of material. I don't know what the battalion would lose a lot of material from the box. We just had our equipment, rifle, and that we still had it, and Bren gun. We still had it, and we really didn't lose nothing at all. Well, I wouldn't say where we did lose anything. We just come out Because all we had was just the in the boxes, as I told you. We would find this anti-giant tank gun or something, 2 pound or something. That's and the Bren gun we had. And that's as much as we had. But we, the anti gun was left and destroyed, like, you know, and then we come out.
And where did you move to after this, when you moved off again?
Was it Fog or something? I think we pulled back to a place called Fog. I might be wrong, I don't know. You can always check up. I think it was Fog that we went to and got back to Lingle to form the Alamein line again. You know.
You didn't get involved in the action at Mers and Matru, where there was.
Yes, oh yes, that was it. Yes, oh true, that was it. That was it. True. This is where we went. It was south of Mers and Matru we were. So this is when RSM Page, he got shot in the leg. Because we're on this bank escarpment, and when you see these vehicles coming towards us, like, you know, and lots of the other were South Africans, like, you know, but when they got on to us, they were South Africans, all right. There were Judy's, and then these little armoured cars, like little things that come up right on top of us. Oh, right. There's the mortars with us. He took the whole platoon, Judy. And there was I don't know if he didn't know that lad. He used to be, he didn't belong Bishop Auckland. He belonged Newcastle way. We used to call him Aggie Ireland. He was signed in the mortars. And he used to be, after the war, he was a manager of the Odeon cinema and Bishop there. And I believe he died after that was closed, like. But he was taking all the mortar platoon. And there was a lad as well called Artie Wheelhouse, and one or two more lads. It was with us. They caught them, like, you know. This is he was a Salvation Army, I don't know. And he went out, going out, when he saw us dash back, like, you know, back into the wall again, he come running back. And Judy let go at him. Got all the lot right up with one side. And we got him back. This Padre Davison, I was telling you, he run out and got him in. Fetched him in. This Padre Davison. And we come back to this hole where we were at. And fired. And Judy come following us up with this armoured car, like, you know, four down this wadi. You let go, and we were running down this roddy to get round the other side, like to the side where the other lads were. And he let go. Ooh, could hear them whistling, even past your lugs, kicking dirt. And we didn't get round, we just see this hole. And there was another lad with us. I don't know if he's alive or not. I'll call him out. And we dived into this hole. And I thought he was going to dig us out with a machine gun. He fired at us. So he's going to dig us out. Anyway, he eased up. And we popped away now and didn't say anything. He must have eased back. Because to the lads at the other side would have been firing at him. Like, you know, there was a escarpment, like, and there was a little wadi then. One of them, there was another little wadi further along, like, you know. And we were up both sides of his wadi and on the top. We had on the top, we had these sangas built with our Bren guns. Anyway, as I say, RSM Page as I say, went out to this thing, and it was found out what they were like, you know. And he shot the commander, like, and he got shot in the leg. And the anti-tank gun, where the anti-tank gun, where we were at, let go, it one. There was another one further back, let go at him. Oh, blow the head off his shoulders. And the lad, the other gunner, blew his arm right off. Right off. We just hung around with threads, like, you know. What was, it was no good for him. The blood was pumping out, like, you know, just like he was saying, blood was pumping out. Oh, there. He's cut his hand off for his jacket, because it was, you know, on a thread. And these white towels, and he put it over it, and it was just coming through the towel. Didn't last 2 minutes after that.
You cut his arm off, you say?
With the jackknife, like, you know.
Was that you?
No, it was one of the lads. Like, I held his hand, like, you know, I just whipped it off. Because it was no good. He was just grabbing it.